You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's Tuesday today, January 6th. Welcome to a new year. Now, one of my favorite sonic surprises on a winter morning is to stumble upon an evergreen tree when dozens upon dozens of songbirds are huddled together within the branches. This one's at Falls Park in Sioux Falls. A few house sparrows dart in and out, but most of them are hidden in the bristling warm interior. And you can't see it, of course, but many of them are shivering. For more on the science of shivering and roosting and migrating, I reached out to Dr. David Swanson, professor of biology at the University of South Dakota.
A lot of times what the birds do in winter is they'll kind of roost almost communally together, and they tend to like that really thick foliage, and so you get that with some of the conifer trees around. And so there are a lot of them that'll kind of pile into there. And it protects them against the wind. It keeps the precipitation off them. Sometimes if there's a lot of them in there, they might even huddle together a little bit, and that conserves on body heat too. So that's a behavior that's kind of all about getting a favorable microclimate so they don't lose heat as rapidly as they would if they were out in the open.
And why is it so noisy?
Yeah,
what are the chirps telling each other?
Yeah,
or telling me?
I think a lot of birds will, when they're in a flock, will kind of talk to each other like that, I guess, is a good way of putting it. And it kind of maintains cohesion within the flock. They might be chattering away, kind of fighting for the best roosting spots in there, too. A lot of the birds will come back to the same roosting areas kind of night after night because it does provide that favorable microclimate for them, and so it gives them a little thermal benefit. Now, I don't know if the birds will assume the exact same spot within the tree. They will defend some of those roosting sites at times, but it might be not individuals. It might be that group would fight off other birds that might be trying to get into there to roost at night as well.
Do they have predators?
They do have predators in the winter that'll get them. And, I mean, at Falls Park, there's some cats, of course, that can get out there, I think, and would get into them if they could find a way in there. But I think it's more kind of squabbling over the territory within the roost tree.
Tell us a little bit about who's left behind now that we hit winter. Like, what birds stay behind and how do they adapt?
Yeah, so there are probably of the species that nest in South Dakota, I'd bet 75% of them migrate. Of the 25% that remain, some of those are what we call partial migrants, where some of the population will move south and some of them will stay. And then there's only a minor percentage of birds, like chickadees, and then we get juncos that spend the winter here, and tree sparrows, and nuthatches, and several of the woodpeckers that are kind of year-round residents as well. And so they'll be here in the winter. And those birds that stick around in the winter have to adjust to those colder temperatures, because you have cold temperatures, you also have relatively low food availability, and most of the insect-eating birds head south because you don't have much for insects here in the winter. There's some that are dormant in the trees, but if you're feeding on flying insects, you're not going to have any food base in the winter, so a lot of those leave. And then the birds that do stay, they tend to switch their foraging behavior. So if they ate insects in the summer, they tend to switch to seed and plant material in the winter. And so that's kind of one adjustment that they make, is there's a shift in diet that occurs. And along with that, there's interesting changes that take place in the digestive tract, because digesting plant material is different than digesting animal material. And so you get increases in the length of the intestine and increases in the surface area so you can better digest the plant material. And so those are some of the things that take place. But in some of the work, the research that I do here at USD is looking at kind of the heat production side of the equation. And that's my best guess for what birds do in the winter. They do a lot of behavioral stuff that's involved with conserving heat, like the roosting behavior that you get in the conifers there. But I think the big change that they undergo is they turn into little heat-producing machines in the winter. And a lot of that has to do with shivering. And so, by and large, these small songbirds that stick around in the winter are shivering all winter long. And so they tend to build their muscles in the winter. They get bigger muscles in the winter than they do in the summer. Some of them about a 50% increase in the size of the muscles. And so we've been investigating all kinds of stuff on what regulates the muscle growth and all of that. But by and large, they just turn into little heat-producing machines.
So they sit and shiver?
Yeah, they shiver all winter long. And they're really good at it because when we shiver, you know, we kind of jiggle around. When birds shiver, they use antagonistic muscle groups, which means that the muscles that do different things. So one might extend your arm, one might contract it. They get those two muscles turned on at the same time, and so they're pulling against each other. And so there's very little disruption of the surface like we see when we shiver. And that has an advantage because any time you're jiggling around, cold air seeps in, and you have to warm it up again. But if you maintain that kind of nice heat-conserving posture while you're shivering, then you tend to maintain good insulation while you're shivering, and so your heat production is really effective.
So please tell me how you're – are you observing that, or how are you measuring that? Tell me more about your research.
Yeah, so mostly what we're measuring is actually the increase in the energy consumption of these birds while they're shivering. Other people have actually stuck electrodes in the muscle to measure the muscle activity, the electrical activity in the muscle while they're shivering to show that. So we're just really looking at the kind of the energy production. And then we're actually using ultrasound measurements to look at changes in muscle size in these birds between summer and winter, too.
Oh. Huh. Can you observe the shivering from the outside?
Yeah, when they get really cold, you can kind of see the tremors. But under normal conditions, where you don't see much for tremors in birds, and that's mainly because they're so effective at using those antagonistic muscle groups to kind of maintain the heat production without jiggling around so much like we do.
That's amazing. How about their feathers? Are they producing more feathers? Does that change at all?
Yeah, they do have a little bit more feathers. And back in when I was doing my dissertation way back in the 80s, I actually plucked a bunch of birds that were around in the summer and the winter and looked at and weighed the feather masses. And they are a little bit heavier in winter, maybe on the order of 10 to 20% greater plumage mass in winter than in summer. But that increase in insulation doesn't provide that much of a benefit to them because they still have to start shivering at pretty high temperatures, relatively high temperatures. So in the neighborhood of, for most of these birds, as you drop the temperature, they start increasing their shivering and their energy consumption. Once you get below about probably 75 degrees, they have to start shivering.
Yeah. Do they fly more, fly less?
I'd say they fly less because when you're flying, you get the cold air seeps in and you get some wind that's passing over you, and so you have some heat loss from that. So they fly to do the food and get the food, but then they kind of sit around after that and shiver, I think. So they're really good, really, really good at producing heat, too. There were some of the original studies looking at this were done in Michigan back in the 70s. And to kind of get these birds to max out their heat production, they had to put them in ultra-cold freezers at minus 80 degrees. And in winter, they tolerated that just fine.
Wow. What about their little feet? It just seems like they would freeze to everything that they touched. What's going on there?
So they have some changes that take place in the fatty acids of the membranes that keeps them fluid. So they, too, tend to reduce the temperature in those feet so that the body temperature in the feet is way different than the body temperature in the core. So the feet are just above freezing typically, and they kind of maintain that through some interesting circuitry of the circulatory system that goes to the legs. And so they keep those feet pretty cold. But you'll see when it's cold outside that and the birds are at your feeder, that they'll puff the feathers of the breast out so that they cover the feet. So they prevent frostbite by doing that somewhat.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, how humans can help. Feeders are a good idea. What do we need to know about feeding birds in the winter?
Yeah, birds are really good at finding food, so they'll use feeders because it's pretty easy to get there.
Okay.
And so I think it helps, but if you have to go away for Christmas for a week or so, they'll be able to find food, I think, on their own just fine. So I don't think they become too overly reliant on the feeders. They use those kind of to supplement the food that they can get normally.
Yeah. Any particular things that you put in your feeder that matter to them? Just whatever you get at the bird feeder store.
Yeah. Well, I provide a mix of seeds. So I provide some suet for the woodpeckers and the nuthatches, and some of those birds will eat that. And then I provide a mixed bird seed. The seed I like tends to have it doesn't have the sorghum in there. So I tend to get the premium seeds that don't have the sorghum, which is kind of those big red ones, because those are too big and hard for most of the small songbirds. And then I also provide some of the black oil sunflower seed that's really good and it's kind of a high fat content.
How are our populations doing in this area?
Yeah, a lot of these birds that are the ones that spend the winter here are doing okay. It seems like a lot of the migrants are having more issues than a lot of the ones that stick around all year. Mm. And that probably has to do with the different habitats that they occupy in summer versus winter versus on the migration route. And so you have kind of three places where habitat loss can be a concern rather than just one on the wintering grounds.
Yeah. What other kind of research are you doing? What is the research that needs to be done to move our understanding of these creatures ahead?
Yeah, so one of the projects that we're involved with right now is kind of an interesting one along the Missouri River down here around Vermilion, because the forested area has changed quite a bit since the dams went in. Both the kind of amount of forest and the composition of the forest. And one of the things that is worrisome is that these eastern red cedars, which are a conifer tree that is native to uplands, but now that they're not very flood tolerant, and so they used to be kept out of the floodplain by recurrent floods. But once the dams went in, those floods don't happen anymore. And as a consequence of that, these cedars have expanded onto the floodplain forest and kind of changed the forest composition. And so the standard kind of conservation practice is to cut out all those cedars because they weren't supposed to be there in the first place. But they do provide some benefits to birds, I think, too. And some of the research that we're working on now is looking at kind of a full annual cycle assessment of the cedars on birds throughout the year. And so we've done some work looking at nesting success and nesting diversity of birds in those habitats. And the cedars seem to have a negative impact on overall bird diversity during the summer. But in the winter, that's a different case because you have a lot of birds that will use the cedars for thermal benefits because they're really the only conifer out there on the floodplain. And then they also, in addition to providing the thermal benefit, they produce those little fleshy cones that look like those blue berries that you see on the cedars.
Yeah.
And there are a number of birds that will eat those in winter. And so it kind of provides some benefit. And our work has shown that the birds in the cedar environments in the winter, if there's kind of a intermediate amount of cedar that's present there, you tend to have the highest diversity of birds there in the winter.
Interesting. All right, so the birds that stay behind, you said tree sparrows. I don't know what a tree sparrow is.
American tree sparrow is a little bird that you find kind of on woodland edges.
Okay.
And then dark-eyed juncos, the birds that you saw at Falls Park might have been house sparrows, and those stick around all year too.
Okay.
Chickadees, nuthatches, several different woodpeckers. And then juncos are a bird that we find here only in the winter because they migrate up north to the boreal forest for the summer.
Okay. And cardinals.
Yep. Cardinals stick around all year, too. Blue jays, some other birds like that, too.
All right. Anything else you wanted to add that we should be paying attention to as we explore the outdoors this winter?
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. One other thing that I'll mention briefly here is that they do, when it gets really cold, they really tend to focus on the foraging. And you can see that if you fill up your bird feeders and the birds are there and it's maybe 30 degrees out, they'll fly away as soon as you pass the corner of the house. But if it's minus 10 out, you get around the corner of the house and they're a little bit more reluctant to leave because they're using that food source. And so they'll adjust their kind of foraging and anti-predator behaviors based upon the temperature too.
Oh.
So there's just a lot of really interesting things that birds will do in the winter.
David Swanson is professor of biology at the University of South Dakota, and he is the author of 2019's Birder's Guide to South Dakota. It's available for order now. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.